Today's episode of the Preachers and Sneakers podcast is brought to you by the Hidden Figures podcast, my brand new project with my buddy Justice Marimi. We talk all about wealth, building it, how to steward it, how to save it, invest it, how to give it, all that good stuff, and how to feel good about the whole concept of wealth. If you're interested in practical ways to not only build side hustles, invest in real estate, invest in the stock market, all that good stuff, and learn the Christian perspective on how we're supposed to view wealth, spending, investing, all that, head on over to the Hidden Figures podcast on iTunes. Check us out there. Subscribe, share, review, all that good stuff. And I think it'll be not only entertaining for you, but you'll definitely get some value out of it, hopefully. So head on over there and take a listen. On today's episode of the Preachers and Seekers podcast, I've got my good comedian buddy, Dustin Nickerson, with me. I met Dustin through, what else, Instagram, and we were able to connect via DM, and he was kind enough to take some time out of his tour with Taylor Tomlinson in Philly to come on the pod and chop it up with me. Like most comedians that I interview, we get derailed super quick, but that's half of the fun in interviewing professional funny people, so I think you'll get a kick out of it and maybe learn something. Fun fact that you'll learn later is that he used to work at Mars Hill Church for the old Mark Driscoll back in the day, so stay tuned for that. And I mean, I was incredibly interested in that topic for sure, so I think you will too. So sit back, take the next hour or so, chill out with me, and take a listen to my conversation with Dustin Nickerson. Today I'm talking with another one of my favorite funny people on the interwebs, Dustin Nickerson. This guy's been on all the platforms doing comedy. He most recently, I think, did a deal with Kevin Hart on Netflix relatively recently, which Kevin Hart's, he's like an up and comer in comedy. So that's pretty good for Dustin's career. But he agreed to spend some time with me to kind of talk about whatever in hopes of entertaining my four listeners for the next hour or so. Dustin, thanks for joining me on the pod today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. The face and fake name of Preachers and Sneakers. I don't even know how to address you. Yeah, it even like kind of looks like you're in a locker room behind you. Like it's got a bit of a compound, maybe not commune, but somewhere in between a compound and a commune behind you.
For
and,
sure.
It kind of fits the vibe.
Yeah, it smells like it too, actually, here. So, but yeah, I do spend most of my time in this 10 by 10 office.
Yeah. Is it, I'm gonna get off the rails early. Is it easier for you to take hate on the internet because it's not your name? or does it still sting because it's like, I mean, it's still you on the other end there. People call you out on character stuff.
Yeah. I mean, you know, people call me a hypocrite a lot.
Right.
Or
right.
Like a coward.
Yeah.
And it's just so, that does feel good. It feels like real. Right into the veins, please. That it still stings just because I would love to be, this is by choice and it's strategic now, but I would love to be out in the public now so I could be like, dude, catch me in the streets and say that type of thing, you know? But now they just, you know, people.
They would like that. They would like you to elevate it to violence right away. Yeah. That would really calm things.
Yeah, that's what a real intellectual people do when they have nothing quick to say. They just resort to violence.
Yeah.
And I'm banking on that being my next move.
I like when people don't get it. When people, not when people are just like, because I'm a fan. I like when people are just like, some people get it. You're like, the irony, right, of you being called a hypocrite is you're calling out hypocrisy. At least that's how I interpret it. And then, but I've had some friends who are like, oh no, it's like an honor to get mentioned on there. Like they're recognizing, you know, your fashion game. And I'm like, I don't think that's it.
it's been interesting because it organically turned into a multi, I guess, I don't know what the word is, but people interpret it different ways. And I let them. I mean, it's like I have this weird, frustrating place that kind of sits in the middle where I've experienced both sides, and I think it's a worthy thing to discuss. But I'm not like far right or far left where I'm just saying this is right and this is wrong. I'm still trying to figure out how I feel about all of it. But it does.
You're like you're like news. You're just presenting the information and going, hey, make what you will of this.
Absolutely. You know? And that's what I find so funny, because people will get so mad with me just posting a picture and the factual worth of these shoes.
Right.
And it's it encourages me to keep going, because for whatever reason, that is punching a nerve in a whole group of people. But yeah, the people that don't get it at all, that are still like, what's the purpose of this account? I love messing with them, because it's like, they'll come. It's like I posted about Tim Tebow maybe about 6 months ago. Uh-oh. And I said something about like notable pastor Tim Tebow on his wedding day wearing such and such Gucci sneakers. And people, like hundreds of people, thousands maybe, came in and said, you know, he played the NFL, right?
And I had one. Just, yes.
So easy to just be like, wait, what? Or like if I'll post about Kanye, I'll say, Pastor Kanye West. And they'll say, he owns Yeezy. I'm like, there's no way he owns Yeezy, bro. Prove it, please.
It's somebody commented on one of mine the other day. I did a video. I don't think it was even about Trump, but I made a Trump joke in there. And I just made a passing remark about, you know, we have this reality TV star as our president.
Which
and
is true.
And I will say, like, regardless of your politics, you can't get me to care about politics. It's right. impossible. So I don't, when people are like, your political stance, apathy. I have no care whatsoever on this. Like, my take on it I just had this thought recently. I was telling my wife, is like, I want out of a president what I want out of a dad when we're out eating at a restaurant. Like, just don't embarrass me. Yes. Just don't. You can get my food wrong. You can order for me. You can do whatever you want. I just want to be allowed to come back here afterwards. Yes. Like, no quasi-racist jokes, you know, no inappropriate stuff, no passing comments at the waitress. Yes. But I made that remark, and somebody was like, well, actually, he was a real estate mogul before that. I was like, do you think I don't know that about Donald Trump? And they're like, and Ronald Reagan was a celebrity before. I was like, yeah, what? Oh, thank you. And I just said, thank you so much for filling me in. I kind of let them have it. Like, because I'm like, if I was talking to Kev on stage about this recently. It's like, you know, getting in the comments usually is an exercise in futility.
Absolutely.
You know, but it can be fun sometimes.
It can be fun if you're in the right headspace. If not, and you write, you can get sucked.
Yes.
I've burned 4 straight hours before going back and forth. And for what? For them to continue to not see my point of view.
Exactly. It does feel good. Have you had people, this is one of my favorite feelings in social media, is when they get mad and they unfollow you and then they follow you back. That feels like a win.
My favorite one is when they say they're unfollowing but never unfollow. I've called out several people for doing that.
Winner.
Like, ugh, okay, you know what? Unfollowing. I can't take this. And then I'm pretty sure I screenshot and posted on my stories the next day and like, hey, you're still here, bro.
I had one last week where I told a bad joke and I overstepped, and it was a joke that I actually apologized for. I don't like making a habit of that, I also don't like people have whatever stance that you want, but it's okay to be like, my bad. Like, it was a joke about putting my kid up for adoption, and it was like, there were like adoptees in there being like, hey man, like, this hurts, this is awful. Like, and you're like, okay. Like, it's one thing to upset a Trump supporter. It's quite another thing to someone who was adopted. And like, and I'm like, you know, I'm like, I realized, I was like, oh no, I am perpetuating. First off, it's kind of hack. It's not even that great of a joke. Like, the point of the joke was me using hyperbole that raising teenagers is hard.
Yeah.
But I got into it, and I was just like, and I doubled down, and I made a dumb comment, like, and I was so stupid, because I was like, oh, you know, people are being too sensitive. You know, I texted my sister who has an adopted kid, and I was like, hey, are people being too sensitive here, or am I off? And I texted a couple friends, and most of them were like, I mean, it's a little mean. And you're like, okay. So, but what I was gonna say, like, I was like, okay, I'm perpetuating a harmful narrative of adoption here. This isn't helpful. I can say my bad. I overstepped here, you know? But what I was going to say is I had a couple comedian friends of mine who are, you know, coming to mind. You hear about never apologize for jokes and da-da-da-da. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, that's okay if that's your stance. To me, I was like, I just have to do whatever helps me sleep. So yeah. when you were talking about getting into people with 4 hours, at the end of it, I was like, no, I feel bad here.
Yeah.
And I feel convicted, call it whatever you call it, and that this isn't the hill I want to die on.
Right.
And it's okay to be like, my bad, overstepped. And if you want to be the person that's like, no, I don't apologize for jokes, that's fine. Mm-hmm. Totally fine. But whatever,
I mean, you just got to deal with it at night.
You're just going to have to be ready. That's when people talk about, like, should you be able to joke about anything? Sure, but you better be willing to deal with the consequences. Like, you can't get mad when people get mad at your jokes, you know? Like, you're trying to push the envelope, and, like, your free speech is as valid as their free speech.
Right.
So they're allowed to get... Now, that doesn't mean they're right. Like, that's the old Ricky Gervais thing. Just because you're offended doesn't mean you're right, mm-hmm. you know? But you can genuinely look at something and go, like, listen... My bad on this. I'm trying to do better. I'm trying to make people laugh, but, you know, this isn't, I mean, talk about punching down of all the groups to punch down on.
I know, finally, the ones that don't deserve it at all.
Finally, someone's given it to the adoptees like they deserve. You're like, sheesh, Dustin.
Gosh, they're selfish idiot. Adoptees. I get it. I imagine, though, as I've talked with other comics about this before, it feels like, I mean, I've heard comics talk about the landscape of joke receivers. Like, it's very easy for people to get offended, and you're at the mercy of how people interpret things.
Right.
Does it feel like it's encroaching in as far as, like, limiting your amount of joke telling or writing?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And one thing that's hard too is, like, you just have to, one really challenging thing about the internet is most people only see, especially if something gets big, like one post, they only see that one post. They've never listened to your podcast. They don't know who you are.
Yep.
They don't know. They haven't seen the history of what you've posted and kind of what you stand for. Like, I make fun of anyone and everyone. That's kind of I always say, like, my goals here are just to make people laugh. Yep. Like, my lanes are jokes and helping people and making people laugh and having a lighthearted, and not taking anything too seriously. Like, that's part of it, you know? But, like, I did a post the other day about, was something about, like, oh yeah, in one generation, we don't talk about politics, to the next generation was, we don't talk about politics, we only yell about politics. And there was some, I think, well-meaning, well-intended commenter who was like, well, we have to, and this is your white privilege speaking, we have to yell because, you know, we're not being heard, and it's an outrage, and there's nothing in your profile that even mentions Black Lives Matter, and you've made a clear choice here. And I was like, whoa, rewind and look at any of the previous posts. I'm taking hate on the other side, but that's what the internet is. I have been called all of them because, you know, if you make a joke about Trump, then you're a libtard or whatever it is, you know, and if you make a joke about Biden, then, you know, you're a bootlicker, you know. It's like whatever dumb, and you're like, listen, I'm making jokes on all people, which is, I guess, means hopefully I would be much more popular if I just stayed in one lane. I told my wife this the other day, is like, if I wasn't known as Dustin Nickerson, if I was Dustin Nickerson the liberal Christian, which I'm not even that liberal, but I was like, my brand would be huge. Like, just people knew what they were getting. Oh yeah, 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 the liberal Christian. But I don't want to be.
So true. And I guess that's the risk in being all things to all people. It's really just a matter of, I guess, compartmentalizing it or going to a ton of therapy as far as, like, being able to process people's comments about your stuff, because there's no way to control somebody coming in and saying one sentence about questioning your allegiance to supporting Black Lives or supporting Trump or all that. And at least for me, somebody can come in and say a freaking 6-word thing in my messages or on comments and literally ruin my entire day. And so you have to, like,
people will
come up with strategies to combat that somehow in order to keep doing it. Otherwise, you're going to get burnt out.
Yeah, I try and laugh about them. On the really mean ones, I share them. I block out their and I love doing that. Because it helps. It's therapeutic. Like people will. Like I shared one that was just like, it was a simple message. It just said, "I thought you were a Christian."
I've gotten plenty of those too.
Oh yeah, I was gonna say you probably get them way more than I do. And it was about a Beth Moore joke that was like pretty positive Beth Moore. Yeah. I was like, no, I love Beth Moore. You know, like I'm on the team. But it just like that helps me a little bit. But you're right, and just like in the state of things that you're like. Like I'm like, why does the internet have to make me like have breathing practices?
Right. Yeah. Do guided meditations on an afternoon walk.
I know. So do you think it is helpful or not helpful that you're anonymous? Do you think that people are meaner because you're a logo? Or it still stings the same way?
It definitely still stings, but I think people probably are a little meaner because it's less personified. There's less
right. They probably don't know it's one person either. A lot of them probably think it's a team or some organization that they're calling, and you're like, ouch.
Especially people that come late that don't know the history behind it or anything. It's like, how do I convey to y'all that it's me on a cell phone doing all of this myself? I mean, for the first year, like going until like probably COVID, I had a media manager that would kind of help curate comments and stuff to.
Yeah,
protect my mental health and my hours, because sometimes people just say hateful, terrible stuff, and I'm like, dude, I don't want to be about that. But I'm excited about coming, like revealing my identity, just because now I can travel around and talk and be more involved and have more like personality towards it. Even though my personality is terrible, but at least I'll have the opportunity to serve that up to people. Because right now it's like, I'm so like, I run up against a wall. It's like, I'm the Preachers and Sneakers guy. I can do the podcast. I can post and I can maybe write some things, but I can't do YouTube. Right. I can't do speaking. Yeah. I can't do any of that. And so I'm looking forward to at least trying it. Maybe it'll be worse. Like maybe people will clown me for whatever.
They're like, yo, go back to the logo. Go back.
Dude, this was a risk, and you have failed. But yeah, I'm sick of it. I mean, I was sick of it maybe 6 to 8 months ago, just because I was like, dude, it's very easy for people to come and say, wow, what a coward, you're hiding behind a thing. It's like, dude,
right?
There was like 2 weeks where I was uncertain about the whole thing, and then it turned into like a Christian Banksy type thing where people don't know who I am or what I'm doing or why I'm doing it.
Right. And then it like, I'm sure for you, it becomes like less interesting too. You're like, all right, I'm just going through these pictures and then Googling this information. You're like, all right, I've done this. I've made this point, you know, like last year I did a thing on my Instagram where I talked about like ridiculous pumpkin spice products a lot, real out of the box stuff here.
Yeah. No, like, wow. That's far reaching. Yeah.
And I've had like that, what the bit was, I would people would send me these things and I would just like talk about like what's worse of the two, you know, like the potpourri smell or, you know, the cream cheese or whatever it may be. And I would do these silly polls and people send them to me all the time. And I'm getting so more of them. People are like, please do them again. And you're like, I get your interest level on this. But first off, I've gotten a lot of new followers since then, and trust me, I've lost a lot of too.
Yes, me too.
So I don't know. I don't know that I want to educate everybody again and be like, "Remember that bit I did last year?" And you're like, "Ah, gosh." I mean, maybe I'll do like a video nodding to it, because there is something to be said for you're like, "Well, this is just boring to me." That's why I started that Send News thing, where I was just like, "I want to talk about everything." Right. I don't want to talk about one topic, you know, like, and I think that's part of the reason that I lost a lot of followers in June, you know, in May when I kind of started being like a little more outspoken about the Black Lives Matter stuff and the George Floyd stuff. Mm-hmm. And people had kind of put me in this like, oh, well, you just talk about parenting and marriage and clean comedy. And you're like, no, that's true. But anyone who really followed me knew better. But a lot of people will just see you as the one thing, like you're saying. Yeah. It's like, oh, no, I want to talk about everything. That's why I'm in this space. You know, if I just wanted to talk about this, I would be like, I would write parenting books, you know?
Yeah, I think about it's like kind of the John Mayer career strategy. Like he got super famous for singing the poppy love stuff,
yeah,
being kind of pretentious.
Absolutely.
But now he's at a point where he's got diehard fans, and whatever he plays, he gets to play whatever he wants and continues to crush it.
Yeah.
I think that's a good long-term strategy for you. I mean, I'm going to try to do the same, like where it's eventually, I guess, desensitize people to hearing other things than just the cult, like the pumpkin spice latte bits.
Right.
And allows you to maybe more creatively pursue other angles.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that when we were talking about, I think it's good. And one thing that I think, one thing that's good about being in the comments is I think it does like actually produce empathy, and like, because you are not more valuable than that other person over there. You're just more popular. That doesn't mean you're more valuable than them, you know? So a lot of time you'll listen and you're like, okay, no, I get it. I get it where they're coming from on these things. And that to me just like will help a person like yourself and myself develop, I think, a more interesting platform, you know, which is like a little more like, this is what I think about everything, and a little more like, you know, potentially voice of the people type stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
And I love that. And making it, that seems more genuine and more like less disingenuous. So like if either of us did the like Tomi Lorenz stance and was just like hardcore, this is right, this is wrong type thing,
people.
I mean, you're turning off half, if not more, the people that I agree. I mean, trying to be a human on the internet is an art form.
Yeah, trying to be treated like a human is a real and it's just very sensitive. And one thing to me that I find ironic is both sides, we're talking politically, both sides think the other side is super sensitive. And I will tell you this as somebody that makes fun of both sides, they're both equally so sensitive. And I think like the far liberal left is sensitive in the name of a good cause, but not necessarily always in the heart of a good cause, because I think that just trying to burn people's careers to the ground in the name of whatever thing like is not necessarily always coming from a good place.
Right.
But I think that I'm blown away at people who elected a reality TV star as their president. I'm blown away at their lack of sense of humor about it.
Like, yes.
If you voted for Trump, be able to laugh about it.
Yes.
You know, like for it's so funny. Like I voted for Bush, and every little fib that he did was so funny to me.
Yes.
Like now I get it. Like I'm a comedian, so everything's pretty funny to me. It's like, but again, like if you're not a Trump person. Exactly. Well, and that's to me like, is it like, I like Trump is many things to me. One of them is funny. Like he makes me laugh sometimes. When he called Elizabeth Warren Pocahontas, I was dying. That's so funny.
It's so bold. Like the nerve to be.
When he said Kung Flu, I was like, oh my gosh, I can't.
Somebody come get this man.
That when you're talking about like you have to deal with it the way that you can, you're just like, but that's like what, like I had a relative that I won't out refer to it as the Oriental flu, and then the president called it Kung Flu, and I was like, this is what old white dudes do.
Yes. I don't give an F. Gosh, man.
Oh, it's so funny. So funny. So both sides are very sensitive.
Yeah. All right. You came through with your promise. You effectively derailed the conversation.
I don't think you've asked a question yet. I'm so sorry.
No, it's great. This is why I want you. And this is why I didn't prepare much, because I knew that you would have. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was just saying, because I knew you'd have a bunch of hot takes.
Yeah. I was gonna say that's what podcasters and are the best podcast guests, because you're like, I know you don't really, you have some questions, but I mean, are you really interested in my writing process? No, I mean, there's things going, and nor is anybody interested in hearing it,
right? If it exists at all.
Yeah, how'd you get your start in comedy? I went to open mics. That's what we do. That's how we started. Like, that's all how, it's like, you know, how'd you become an accountant? I got a degree in accounting. That's what we do. That's our process.
Yeah. I do want to know what drove you to go to those open mics, because open mics seem terrifying. And as somebody that's always considered dipping their toe into it, it still sounds terrifying. You grew up in Seattle. Was this in, when you moved to SoCal, or did you do comedy before that?
I did not do comedy in SoCal or in Seattle. I was so when I let's see here. In college, I wanted to be a journalist. I was a journalism major at the time. I was going down that route. I was writing for various papers and publications.
Cool. UW. And then did you go to UW?
I went to UW. Yeah. Okay. Go Dogs.
Go Dogs.
The last, like, it was almost the last, it may have been the very last sporting event before everything got shut down, was us losing in the Pac-12 tournament. And then they canceled the rest of the Pac-12 tournament. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're like, all right, Huskies lost. We're done here. So anyways, the I was that, and then I was like, I want to talk about more than just sports, because I was a sports journalist. That's okay. Where that's where I was going, and I wanted to talk about more interesting things, but I didn't really know, like, I didn't know what that meant. I didn't know, like, I just thought, I was like, well, I want to talk about, like, more weighty issues than just sports. And then, but I was, you know, I'd like become a Christian in like high school, and I was in and around church circles, so I was like, oh, I guess I'll just go into ministry, you know, which is like a very, maybe some people have like an ordained calling and stuff, but other people I think just are like, well, ministry's around, that's an option. And that's how I that's, you know, that's where I got into it. And then I worked in youth and kids ministry for like 7 years at a little church called Mars Hill Church.
Oh, small. Yeah, Driscoll. Quaint.
So I've been in and around controversy a lot of my life.
That's a different podcast.
And, yeah. And well, you could see that alone. You could see why I have a real sensibility to making fun of mega church pastors.
Yes.
We're like, it's my favorite thing. You know,
mine too.
I really. And you know what the best thing is when they're in your comments and they laugh.
Yes.
The ones who have a sense of humor. It's the best, because it really does dissolve everything. And when they're like, my bad, or you got me. Like,
if they had done that from the beginning, my account probably wouldn't be. I mean, my account would be sub 1,000 people, I think.
Yeah, that's true. It was the hate, though, it was the people who argued, or this was a gift, or, you know.
Yeah. It was pure hate that really drove the growth of my account.
Let's be honest. Comments, baby. I really get some. You're like,
but yeah, your guy, Judah Smith, he's one of the guys that came in. He's not your guy, but he's in Seattle, or was
Seattle guy. Yeah,
but
he had a good sense of humor about it, though, right? Yeah.
He did a whole talk on it, and he was like very gracious about it. And then he follows me now and comments every once in a while.
I knew he would, because he's always been that way. Plus, he's just always been super into fashion. He's always been that way since he was like a college pastor in the Seattle area. He'd be like, yeah, that Judah guy, man, he's an eccentric dresser, that guy. But anyway, so I was always like in love with stand-up, though. And when I left, we left Mars Hill before the crap hit the fan, but it was rising to the fan. And so we moved to SoCal. And
so you worked for Mark Driscoll?
Yes.
Okay. That's
for 7 years.
Wow. So that's seven years.
7 years in at Mars Hill is like 30 years at somebody else. Everyone got fired. And I wasn't like... you know, part of the reason that I think I never got fired is I was never one of the guys. Like, I was never one of the people in, like, the big platforms. I always say, like, I was just this cockroach living under a bench that just kept missing the A-bomb. Like, it just, like, everybody around me would get fired, because that was really a part of the... Like, people got laid off a lot there, you know? Jeez. And it was just... I would just kind of miss it. And
he, like, just kept introducing himself to you? Like, oh, you're on
the
team?
Yeah. It was 1,500 people when we got there. It was 15,000 when we left. But I was a non-factor there. I was just this kid that was, like, started as an intern, working in the youth ministry, doing the kids ministry. Like, I almost thought it wasn't important enough to get fired or to get promoted high up. You know, not out of lack of ambition. I just didn't. So I never, like... I knew, and I mean, I guess you would still say I know Mark. I haven't seen him in years. But like, I was never like in one-on-one meetings with him. He was never my supervisor.
Right.
You know, that's what a lot of people, you know, in mega churches is like, Like, oh, you were at Willow Creek. He's like, yeah, but it's not like I had a weekly sit down with Hybels, you know? It wasn't, we weren't close. These are big organizations, you know? So, when we moved to SoCal, I just like, you know, I don't know if you've ever had a big move, but like, it's, if you do, it feels like a fresh start in some ways. And we started spending, really almost since we landed there, started going to LA pretty regularly and just kind of got my heads in the clouds a little more, like in a good way of just like, what am I doing here? Yeah. You know,
because people are out there doing it. That's the place to go.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it really is just, you know, I would never want to live there because I think you kind of get trapped in the like, I'm not doing enough. I'm doing enough. There's my friend on a billboard. I'm not doing enough.
Yep.
but maybe I want to write. Maybe I want to finally get that book published or something like that. And da da da. And I just went to an open mic because I'd always been in love with comedy and just kind of
crushed.
Didn't stop. No, I did not crush. I did okay, though. I did okay. It was 3 minutes, two tables, combined five people.
Nice.
I got two laughs in the 3 minutes, and it was enough. And then I just like, and this is how I like learn and grow. And then I just became obsessive. I did the open mic. A friend came with me. I sent him home and I just talked to comics for like the next 3 or 4 hours. I was like, well, how often do you do it? And then the show was like a mix of open mics. And then it went into a regular show, like the past regulars. And I started talking to them. I was like, well, what does that mean? How did you get past here? I just started asking.
So you were the noob of all noobs.
I was. Yeah. But if there's one thing comedians will talk about, it's themselves. So. Yeah. You know, they're, you know, so I just didn't, here's the thing about open mics. To me, they are so brutally hard that they're like a boot camp in the sense that like, it'll weed you out if you don't want to do it. A lot of folks in similar spaces to you have dabbled and then they go, no, I don't want to do this. Because it is like, you know, there's one thing to have a platform and start doing shows in comedy clubs. That's not stand-up comedy. That's you have a platform and people are coming to see, but you're kind of participating in a different form of entertainment. It's not a bad form of entertainment. It's just not stand-up comedy. Stand-up comedy is a very specific thing that's honed in a very specific way. You know, like Chappelle having Will Smith do 10 minutes, that's not really stand-up.
Right. He's going to get laughs regardless. It's like when a pastor tells a joke, they're going to get laughs regardless.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, exactly.
If you're like me at all, this quarantine has been kind of a bummer. And I've really been looking for ways to improve my thought life, improve my time meditating and reading. And I found that the Upper Room Daily Devotional Guide has been a huge help. So if you check out the Upper Room, you can count on them for daily inspiration, daily community, and daily prayer. It's really the only daily devotional magazine that's written by readers, ordinary people like me, people who have encountered God in daily situations. The Upper Room is here for you every day through your email, custom app, or printed magazine. And you too can enjoy a free 30-day trial of the email or app service by visiting upperroom.org/welcome. That's upperroom.org/welcome to get your first 30 days free. Check it out.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's part of the reason that I thought I could do it. As I was like, oh, I'm pretty funny. And then I was like, it's very different when people go, be funny. You're here to be funny.
Ready, go.
So, yeah, exactly. So I just kind of stuck with it and just kept doing it. So that's the point of saying, like, I think they are so brutal that it's a good thing that you'll know right away. And then I was also like, I need to work to get out of these as soon as I can.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I've heard that schedule is bonkers. Like, if you want to make it, you got to be there 6 nights a week, sitting up there for 3 hours in order to do 5 minutes, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. The open mics. Yeah. It is pretty grueling. And it is hard. Like, do you have kids? Do you talk about this? I don't know.
I don't. I don't have kids.
Yeah. That's the part of the schedule thing is just so brutal of just like, oh gosh, you know, a lot of times, like you said, you have to like leave at 6 to go sign up and then you're not on until like 1 and you're just like, it's pretty brutal. So, and it's bad and you go home sad and bad and sad. That's
just a nice cycle of self-loathing and anticipation.
Yeah. And what am I doing here? And, you know, but I think that in that way, having a family worked against me. And another way that it helped me is more substantial. It's like, I need to like get good at this as soon as I can, though.
Yeah.
I need to be great at this. Like, I need to get money in this. I need to advance. I need to outwork everybody. And that came in the fashion of just like building up socials or starting a podcast or getting a website or like networking or hitting the road. And, you know, just like, when there's an urgency to like be a pro at it, like you do kind of, you know, tend to work a little harder, you know?
Yeah. Were you working at the time? I mean, this isn't an overnight
thing. Yeah. I did 5 years of working both, and which is, I'm very blessed. Like that's a short period. A lot of people can't go pro at 5 years. You know, it's a lot of, Leno said 7, you know, usually by everyone, you know, who's going to be a pro is usually a pro by 7 years. But I think that that's a different, Leno came up at a different time, you know, like I remember I did years ago, I was middling at a club, Zany's in Chicago, for a comic friend of mine named Don Fries, and he was one of the first guys to take me on the road. And he handed me my feature check. And for your listeners, feature is the middle act. So there's an host MC feature and then a headliner. So I was the feature act. And he headlined. Yeah, he gave me, I looked at the check and he goes, just out of curiosity, how much is it? And it was like, you know, in the hundreds. I don't remember what it was, but we'd been there for like a week. And he goes like, I know this is going to hurt your feelings, but I just want to let you know that that feature pay that you just got is the same that I got here featuring in 1994. And I was like, that does hurt my feelings. That very much that hurts my feelings, because I think $75 a show would have gone a lot farther in 1994 than it does right now. So I don't remember why we should have talking about that. But
you were working double.
Oh, I was working double. Yeah, I was working at a rec center. Favorite job I've ever had that
big
wasn't
money.
Comedy. Loved. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it was a fun job. You know, it was people based. It was we played a lot of ping pong, you know. A lot of pickup basketball games, you know, like it was in the community that I live in. My wife still works there a couple hours a week. We're still actively involved in there.
That's cool.
So I was grateful for that. But there were a lot of, I was golfing with a friend of mine recently, Adrian, and he's the guy that took my job. He was like my assistant manager, and then he took over when I left, and he's like, bro, you used to come in on those Monday mornings looking haggard, just because what
smelling
I would do.
Smelling like bar tar.
Smelling like at best bar tar and a little bit of airport, because what I would do a lot of the time is I would work the clubs. I usually with clubs, you're Thursday, Friday, Saturday, or Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And a lot of the time what would happen is I would work the Sunday through Thursday the week before, and then I would take the first flight out Friday and go to wherever I was going in the country. Mm-hmm. And then I would stay at that place Friday, Saturday, do the show Sunday night, save money in the hotel, and then go sleep in the airport, and then take the first flight home back to the West Coast and be in around 10 or sometimes noon, depending. Like I did that like probably half the weekends for about 3 or 4 years.
Jeez.
And in my mind, I was like, nobody even notices. I'm just out here crushing it. And then my closest coworker was like, dude, you looked like hell.
For 3 straight years.
I was like, for every Monday for 3 years? He's like, yeah, it was like kind of a known thing. Like, don't stand too close to Dustin on Mondays. He is tired and smelly. And I was like, well, I'm also sore because I tried to figure out how to do that sleep between the arm rests on a airport bench.
Ugh.
Those things are why don't
That's
do that
terrible. And you stayed married the whole time.
Stayed married, still married.
I read online that you've been married for 15 years. Or maybe
16
is that more?
Now yeah, I need 16. To update that bio.
You're 36
16
now?
Years 35, wife is 36. Just throwing that out there. The you know, I'm yeah, we got married young. I was 19, she was 20. Did the high school sweetheart thing. It helps a lot. It's two things that really help. And the reason that I'm still married is the reason that I even do comedy. My wife is an artist. She gets it. She gets the drive. She's a graphic design major. She's very creative.
Nice.
She is totally, you know, right-brained in that sense, and understands, mm-hmm. like, no, I need to create, you know. Right. And if I can create and that and be compensated for that, like, let's go. And we both have kind of a shared desire to show that to our kids of just like, no, no, man, you can, like, I can't tell my kids, like, you gotta get it, you gotta be a doctor, a lawyer. Like, really? Really?
Really, Dad?
What, based on what you do
on the weekend, like, in 6 years?
Yeah. You're out here making poop jokes and paying rent, and you're telling me I have to be a lawyer? Like, so I was going to say, and the other part of it is, you know, it has gotten to the point now where things are good enough that, like, I need help running this thing, and yeah. and Melissa, my wife, is in it with me. I mean, Dustin Nickerson Comedy is an LLC. I'm CEO, she's CFO. Like, we got books to run and taxes to do and yeah. stinking websites to update. I mean, it's a lot of stuff, and she's really in the nitty gritty with me. So,
and she's on the podcast a lot. She's on your podcast a lot.
She is. Yeah, she is.
She's got good podcast voice.
She does, right? She's very sweet. She's not a sweet person, but she's very sweet I say that on the pod. Like, people are like, is your wife sweet? It's important to have. She's not sweet. She's driven. She's funny. She, you know, she's passionate. I would never call her sweet. Not everyone gets to be sweet. But yeah, she does the pod with me about half the time. And a lot of that just started because of quarantine. I was like, hey, it's pretty hard to get guests right now. Yeah, I mean, you're out here settling for me. We all know as many celebrities
things have taken a turn
Dallas
content-wise.
So did both for a while.
I see. Okay, that's cool. And so now, I mean, you're doing it full time. I mean, you went through the stages of, like, performing at random ass churches, like any type of place you could.
RACs are what we call those.
Yes,
actually.
Yes, no, yeah. That's incorporated.
Yeah. A rack. I got another rack tonight.
But now, I mean, at least I read your rap sheet online. I mean, you've been on Hulu, Netflix, you've been on Fox, you've been on all these different platforms. When did that kind of stuff start happening?
Here's the thing. The church stuff, like, churches have always been about 10% of what I do. I started touring with John Christ and Tim Hawkins, and then I kind of got thrown in that space a little bit.
Oh, you're a Christian comedian.
Exactly. But I am a Christian. But part of the reason that both of those guys took me is I don't really talk about it. I don't do jokes about church or Christianity. It's not in the act. And because, you know, I'm a club comic. Like, I'm in the secular space. That's where, when I'm, like, hanging out with other comics, they're like, a lot of them don't even know that I do that stuff, you know? Like, so I've done those gigs, but it's not really, it's never what I sought out to be. I have no interest in that, you know?
And it's a very limited market.
Well, yeah, first off, you get treated like a pastor there, and I have no interest in that. Yeah. But also, yeah, it's very limited, and there are some insanely funny and talented comics. Tim Hawkins makes me cry laugh.
He's outstanding.
I mean, he's one of the funniest, most talented human beings I've ever met. And like, I would watch his show all the time. And any of the folks that toured with him, John, Bob Smiley, John Branion, all Johnny W, we all talk about, like, this man is like a savant, you know.
And he's been doing it forever.
Forever. And he did it totally his own way. Like, he's had all the big agencies, all the big shows kind of come to him, and he's like, why? You know?
What? I'm getting these gigs without y'all.
Yeah, I'm selling 4,000 or 5,000 tickets without you. I'm good. You know, like, so I have done a lot of that stuff, but I always just felt like, for me, and this is only for me, I wanted to be as universally funny as I could be. I've always wanted to be, I've always prided myself on versatility. Can this act be funny anywhere under any circumstance? And the answer is no. But I try.
It's a good goal to have.
Yeah, I do try to have, you know, like, an act, or at least enough jokes that I could kind of survive anywhere, you know, and maybe not thrive, but I could survive. Like, when I get booked for, like, a youth camp, I'm always like, oh gosh, no. I mean, half of my act is ripping in front of teenagers. The other half is about being married. Like, but I'm always like, I'll give you a half an hour. I can give you a half an hour. I can't
double the price.
Exactly. Yeah. That was one of the last gigs I did. I did a gig, a youth camp in June, and I was like, oh gosh, I don't want to do this. How much? Okay, I'll be there. Okay.
All right.
Exactly.
So you're on tour, or you're doing just Philly right now. You're on tour with Taylor Tomlinson.
Yeah, I'm in Philly right now. Everything is so start and stop. You know, like I'm in Philly right now for almost 2 weeks, which I've never gone this long. That's very rare that I've ever toured like this. But it's the type of stuff, because they don't have their normal venue, and because Taylor's selling a lot of tickets, we're outside and there's like a capacity at like 70 people. So they just kept adding shows. So, I mean, the idea that you would be here that long is, you know, pretty unheard of. But, and then
so
I'm home
cheese
for a little.
Steaks. Like,
so many
cheesesteaks.
Cheese steak
a day for 2 weeks, bro.
And I'm out here trying to lose weight to film a special. This is not helping me right here. I got Duncan in cheesesteak. So So it's this, and then it's just I just kind of polled my fans a while back to see if anybody would be interested in me doing backyard shows. Mm-hmm. And so I have some of those coming up. I'm stringing along here. I go from here to Emporium, doing one there, and then somewhere in Virginia, and then I fly home, then I come back out. And that's kind of what it is. It's just like a little here, a little there, a little here, you know. And then certain states you can do. Like I'm doing this conference in Florida that I was like, well, there's no way that's going to happen. Now in Florida, it's going to happen.
We don't give an F in Florida.
They're like, everybody's sitting on each other's laps here. Yeah, no masks allowed. Yeah,
We're not going to live in a spirit of fear. So you just casually throw out that you're recording a special soon.
Yeah, yeah.
On what? Who's producing it?
Well, that's why I don't. When is this? This will probably be public information by the time that it's being produced by Kev on Stage.
I love him.
Yeah, I'm a big fan, and I owe a lot to Kev. And
he's hilarious.
He's so funny. Yeah, we're. I mean, there's a chance that none of this. I'm going to speak super candidly, and if none of this is happening, I will tell you to take this out.
Sounds good.
It looks like on September 26th, I'm going to be filming a special outdoors in LA in this cool little space where, I've been wanting to film the special for a while. Everything was chipping along. We had some interested buyers. Da 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 da. End of the world happens. Mm-hmm. Now we're here, and. This kind of came about in an interesting organic way with this production company called Transit. They've done a couple of really cool specials, like with Tony Baker, really cool stuff. And then Kev said he wanted to be involved. So where it's going to be, we don't know yet. I think we'll know by the time we should know by the time we film, but like, it's totally just the wild, wild west as far as specials and hours and stuff go right now, because it's like, it might just go land on Kev's YouTube page. I don't know, you know, like, which probably get a lot of views. So I'm not going to complain about that.
I hope it crushes. I mean, those guys.
Thanks, man.
Those two guys are so underrated in the grand scheme of things. Like Tony Baker's videos, I watch every single day. And that is some of the purest comedy. Like his voiceover videos destroy me every single time.
Yeah, he gives me the real giggle laughs. I was watching him do a set the other day, and he was doing a bit like, man, you ever seen the moon out during the day? Like, what are you doing here, man? You eavesdropping on the sun? That's like the silliest. Stupid. But then he'll also, and then the next post, he'll be like, yo, these cops got to stop killing people. And you'll be like, all right, Tony, you are
going after all of it.
I love it. I really, he's a really, really pure, funny human. Like, just, like, to his core. Like, those dad joke videos that they used to do. I mean, watching him not laugh makes me laugh. I mean, you're dialed in at that point. Kev posted a thing. So, on the last social distancing show, that he has this thing called Keep Your Distance Comedy. It's like a virtual comedy club. There's like, this is where I got connected with the production company. Like, there's like 20 people there, and then it's streamed out, and I had a good set, and the people were like, hey, let's start talking. I was like, let's talk big. I want to film a special. And we've been rolling that way. But he ended it being going, he's like, I used to be a preacher, and I can preach on anything. And he did it, and he posted this video. You got it. And he's like, hey, Isaac's, people are saying, well, you could never preach about the WAP. And he did it, and it is so crying funny. I couldn't believe it. He wrote it during the show.
This is Kev, right?
This is Kev on Stage.
Yes,
and it is
I think
so
I saw
funny.
That.
and oddly poignant, and Cardi B shared it.
Oh, did she really?
Like, this, she did. And oh. I was like, this is like legit from the heart.
I'd seen some of his earlier videos preaching or like comedically yeah. preaching with the towel and yeah. like the stutter and yeah, watch yeah. this, watch this. It's just like
yeah,
so
yeah. He's pure. So good. He's a really fun guy to just Trevor Wallace is another example of that, of just kind of watching people find what their thing is, and then it really resonates with folks and it really just kind of takes off. And yeah. it's like good. And you know, and it is so good, and I hope to one day find it for myself.
Keep still pressing on,
looking.
I know I've taken about an hour of your time, but I would be remiss if I didn't ask a former Mars Hill employee and Christian guy forever what he thought about preachers and sneakers, or the whole concept of maybe these Instagram mega church pastors, them being celebrities, and them wearing $2,000 shoes.
That's yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Like, I've been pretty I'm not for or against any one church size. I think it's yeah. all very what's that?
Oh, I was agreeing with you.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I've met some very chill, very humble mega church pastors, of dudes that, like, there's this this pastor of a church up in Valencia, California, named Rusty, and called, like, it's I always mix it up. Is it Real Life Church, Reality? One of those ones, one of the real ones, you know. Okay. They keep it real.
Yeah,
one of the kindest, sweetest, most humble dudes I've ever met. I love him, big fan. As far as I can tell, the church makes a huge impact in the community, all those kind of things.
That's
love
dope.
It big, and it's so cool. As far, I mean, he might be totally corrupt, I have no idea.
For
I've
sure.
just talked to him five times and he seems pretty good. And then I've met some small church pastors with the biggest egos I've ever met in their life, in my life, you know. To me, it's just I get it. I was in it for a long time, but what is so maddening to me is the branding, like the platform of the branding of the platform, and like the yeah. high produced videos and the captions over yep. it. You're just like, oh no, well, we have to build this so for the sake of the kingdom and da 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 da. And I was like, I can't be the judge on those things. My only thing, and I will say this from someone who was at a part of a mega church, is if your church went away, one of the pastors at that church, I remember he said this, if your ministry went away, if your church in your area went away, would the people of your church in your city even care? Would they lament your demise? Would they be glad to see you go? And to me, if you're not making like a really huge, significant impact in the area that you are at, that your ministry is supposed to happen, I was like, what are you even doing here?
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't care if you're wearing shoes, expensive shoes, as long as you're putting coats on people's backs in your community that need it, you know, like, as long, you have a nice house, but make sure that the homeless in your community have a house, you know, mm-hmm. like, as long as it's both, as long as it's like, you know, like, I understand that some people just have different interests. Like, cars are a good example. Like, I don't judge anyone that drives a nice car. Just nice cars don't do anything for me. They yeah. don't. I have no interest in spending money on a nice car. It's not a pack. Do I probably spend a ridiculous amount of money on high-end coffee? Absolutely. I absolutely do. And you could judge me for that. Is that way less impactful than a car? Sure, but I don't. I have
know, but that coffee is life-giving, though.
That to me is just it. Like, I'm in the world of non-Christians. Like, yeah. This is where I'm at, and I hear what they have to say about your church, and I hear what they have to say about you and your ministry, and I understand that a lot of folks are like, oh no, that's just persecution. No, it's not. They just don't think you matter. They don't think that the work that you put into the world is making a significant impact. And I know that your church should not be judged by non-Christians, solely, but they should like the work that you're doing. Like, you've never heard, like, you know who people don't rip on? The Salvation Army.
Yeah, that's true. Like,
they don't, you know, nobody's like, man, that freaking Salvation Army.
Yeah. Just lining their pockets.
Oh my gosh, helping in all those emergency disaster relief efforts.
The worst. They're just in it for the image.
Yeah, like people don't really, like, you've never heard a lot of people crap on World Vision, you know, like, you know, they're like, oh, no, people are doing some good work. So I don't know people's hearts, but I will say this, like, maybe this is going to come full circle. If you're going to be a comedian and you're going to make a joke and you know it might be a little edgy, you better be prepared for some pushback on that. And if you're going to be a pastor who does not pay for anything, you get paid by your people. You're there because of their tithe, and with somebody else's tithe dollar, you're gonna buy a $2,000 pair. And you know what? Some people's like, oh no, it's the book deal. Why did you get a book deal? Because of your big church.
Yes,
you're there because of your people. Your whole image, platform, everything is based on the generosity of your people. You work for them. You know, and that's why I like when I see people that, like, get so mad, like, especially uber conservative Christians, like, oh, damn, my tax dollars are going to this. Well, your tithe dollars go into that. So be consistent, you know, like, so if you're going to do that, and I'm not saying you should or you shouldn't, just you need to be prepared for pushback. And I think that that's what your account does, is it keeps a little accountability. And if your congregation doesn't care and they can have a good sense of humor about it, fantastic. And if your conscience is clear, again, I'm not in any position to judge, but you cannot wear those things with the intent to get noticed. You know, like, that's why you wear flashy clothes, is to get noticed, and then get noticed, and then get mad that you got noticed. Like, this is, you did this. I'm just, like you said, you're not throwing any shade. You're just like, You're just presenting facts, you know. Yeah. It was a gift. I got it on sale. Okay. I mean, that's probably true. Maybe probably a lot of the time they did own get it on sale.
Instead of being
But for your sake, it's got to be the highest number possible, right?
I mean, that makes for better content.
Exactly.
Admittedly. People all the time will say, dude, you should do some of the more, more reasonable shoes. Some of the pastors that are just wear khakis. I'm like, dude. Does that sound interesting and fun to you? Doesn't to me.
Yeah. MacArthur's making other kinds of headlines. He doesn't need you.
That's true.
He doesn't need
not need any more publicity. More flashiness.
Yeah, like Tim Keller in sneakers is not an interesting thing, you know.
Not whatsoever.
Keller's a good example of a guy who I was like, oh yeah, no, he's an intellectual. He's been in Manhattan. He's made an impact. He's, you know, he's written books that seem to matter. His city seems to care and love for him. You know, like, I mean, this to me seems like, and that's a big church, you know, in our area, it's hard to have a big church.
And he's able to influence young people, like young professional people.
And he did, I for a long time, he did the Q&As after the services and answered people's questions and intellectually stimulated a lot of people, you know. So again, it's the size of your church matters, you know, really nothing. But I'm in the space and you're in the space that, like, you know, like when you see a video of some guy in some incredible outfit, you know, and then he's like, and you listen to him and it's like got like 2 million views or whatever, 10, 20 million views. And you're like, I just watched a guy say nothing for 2 minutes. Like, I mean, just literally there was no
substance.
I mean, there's just not an ounce of matter to what the things that he said, you know. That's like that's where I'm just like,
what are you doing?
I usually get less discouraged about the person, and I get like a little more discouraged about the lack of critical thinking amongst the church.
The ability to discern, the ability to ask questions, the ability to say, hey, can we have a little more than just the pull yourself up by your bootstraps talk?
Yeah. And I think that there's a place for that. I think that absolutely matters, you know, but sometimes it just gets a little like, when that's the most popular thing, you're just like,
I mean, it's a commentary on all of us, I think, because we're demanding that. I mean, we demand digestible, entertaining type sermons in a lot of contexts. And of course, people are going to be really good communicators and serve that up for us if we're demanding it.
Right. Yeah. So, well, it's what part of the thing that's can be discouraging too is like somebody usually does it really well once, mm-hmm. and then you're just like, and then it gets like copycatted a bunch. So like, oh, what if we had like a sermon series or a slide behind us in a logo? You're like, all right, okay, now you've got
we could drive
some
a motorcycle onto stage.
And then you've got some guy meeting in a middle school for 11 people who's like, the graphic designer is the second hire. That's we get pastor and graphic designer.
And we're going to pay him $30,000 a year. It'll be great. It'll be perfect.
Yeah, yeah. We need a social media guy. That's like that's going to be the key to us growing right now. But I feel for pastors because it is like, and you know, it's a total digital era. You know, I just, yeah. No, thank you.
Yeah, I know. Me either. And I get the desire.
No, thank you. And that I don't want to do it. That's what I mean.
No, agreed. Yeah. I definitely don't want to do it. And I get wanting to reach as many people as possible. But there's an interesting like inflection point where it turns into like, I'm here for the social media and not here for the mission of the whole thing. It's
right,
you know,
right.
Again, that's probably another podcast. But surprisingly insightful comments from a comedian performing in backyards.
You know what? You know when a pastor is funny and you're like, oh my gosh, I didn't see that coming. The same thing is when a comedian is insightful. You go, it wasn't really that insightful. You just didn't see it coming.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, all right, I'll give you that. Okay. That's way more than I expected, but
wow. Wow. I did not see any amount of critical thinking coming on that guy. That was really something. I mean, on a level of 1 to insightful, like that was a 4, but for a comedian, out of the park.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, Dustin Nickerson, this is your time to plug all the things that you're got going on in the world. Where can people find you? Online.
Sure. Yeah. All my social media handles are at Dustin Nickerson. You can give me a follow there. I have a podcast called Don't Make Me Come Back There. We are a funny podcast about family. New episodes every Tuesday. So wherever you listen to podcasts, you can listen to that there.
Heck yeah. Subscribe to the podcast. Leave a rating and a review, maybe.
Heck yeah, bro. A good one.
Yeah, a good one. Don't be using those 1-star reviews. And potentially a special, a mysterious comedy outdoor special.
Yeah. Available somewhere, probably. Actually, I'm going to bother you again to come promote that. So whenever that comes out, I'm coming on again.
Heck yeah. Happy to do it. I mean, I'm not doing anything else with this platform, so might as well hook other people
up. I've been holding off calling in favors, and that's going to ring that bell in November.
I've got a ton of influence, so you should get 6 new consumers. That.
Yeah, I don't want a tweet. I want an Instagram share, buddy.
Okay,
I don't
got want... you. Yeah. Oh, you don't want my 2,000 Twitter followers to see? Yeah. Well, Dustin, it's great to meet you, seriously. And
you as well, buddy.
I think you're incredibly hilarious because it's very hard to be funny, especially now, especially being clean and not being able to be in person in a lot of contexts. So
clean and mean. That's my brand, buddy. Clean and mean.
That should be your tattoo if it isn't already. Yeah. All right, buddy. Well, I really appreciate your time, and I hope you crush it in Philadelphia. Tell Taylor I said, what's up, what's happening, and I will talk to you later.
Cool. Thanks, man. Appreciate
it. All right, buddy. Talk to you later.
Boom.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Preachers and Sneakers podcast. If you didn't do what I told you to do at the beginning, head on over to iTunes, subscribe to the pod, rate, review, and share the episode if you can. Would love it if you did that. It's a huge help. You have no reason to, other than me asking. So I really appreciate everyone that's been doing that for me. Well, at least the positive reviews. But I'm willing to take the negative reviews for feedback purposes. So do what you want. But we'd really love if you subscribe. And big shout out to Dustin Nickerson again for spending all that time with me. I loved getting to talk to him and getting to know him. Dude's hilarious professionally. So super fun to talk to a guy like that. If you haven't, follow him on all the socials at Dustin Nickerson. Check out all of his YouTube content. He's got a ton of really good stand-up online. Be sure to follow him on all that. Consume his content and share it with your friends because he really benefits from all that. And be on the lookout for that super secret special that he's working on. I think in LA is what he said. So thanks again to Dustin. Thanks again for listening to the Preachers and Sneakers podcast. And looking forward to hanging out for the next episode of the Preachers and Sneakers podcast.